The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm Lucy Dunn, and today I'm joined by two Michaels, Michael Gover, editor, and Michael Simmons, who cleans the cupboard in the spirit, our economics editor. And Michael Simmons, I'll start with you. We heard this morning that the UK economy grew faster than expected in the first 3 months of the year. According to figures released by the Office for National Statistics, GDP rose by 0.7% in the first quarter. You've written for this for Coffee House about this. Is this a sign that Rachel Reeves' work is paying off?
Well, it's certainly good news for the Chancellor. She'll be, you know, ecstatic about this. I mean, if this growth was to continue across the year, we'd be by some distance the fastest growing part of the G7. But is it down to Rachel Reeves? I would say, you know, emphatically no. And there's a few signals in the data that suggest that. There's one particular survey that economists are really interested in, which is the Purchasers Managers Index, and it's basically a measure of, you know, companies buying stock. And what we saw was in March, so right in the end of the quarter, that kind of jumped to, I think it was the highest level for 5 years. And what this suggests is that a large part of the growth is companies were worried that Trump's Liberation Day was about to happen. So these tariffs were about to come in. And what companies have done is they've stockpiled and they've brought forward, you know, business and orders they would have done later in the year. So that sort of inflated the figures. The second thing is, even if you were to say, whatever, it's still good news, the signs are that it's not going to continue. And specifically, I'm afraid to say, because of really actions of the Chancellor and other government departments. So talking of that PMI index again, in April, it came down considerably from that March high. But also, these figures don't take into account the slowdown that we're starting to see in the labour market. You know, unemployment is going up, job vacancies are down, and that's because of the $25 billion raid on employer national insurance, and the minimum wage going up. And then obviously we've got the sort of effects of the employment rights bill that hasn't, you know, even come into fruition yet. So I think if you speak to, you know, most economists and forecasters, whilst they might bump up their forecast for the whole year as a whole, the next few quarters are not going to be as rosy.
And in the magazine this week, Michael Simmons, you've written this week's brilliant cover piece in which you point out that last year alone, it's believed that London lost 11,300 dollar millionaires. There are reports out today that the Labour government is looking at introducing a special visa for foreign investors to reverse this trend. Do you think this will be enough to stop the exodus?
Well, firstly, it's a very funny thing to do, given that, you know, it's an exodus that they've caused. I mean, yes, Jeremy Hunt in the spring budget last year is the person who eradicated this non-dom regime, but it was this government that went further and did the change that the piece explains that's really driven them off about how it affects inheritance tax. So they're the ones who did this change and, you know, were explicitly warned during a consultation period that this was going to be the effect and it would damage the tax take. So it's odd that they've now got this policy to attract people. But to answer your actual question, you know, will it work? I think no. And this is what shocked me when I was speaking to people in the wealth industry for the piece, because, you know, that was a natural question to me. If the government decides we got this wrong, let's start attracting them, surely they'll just come back, because who actually wants to live in Dubai? And the answer every time, every person asked, was no, because what's more important to these wealthy wealth creators is not so much that, yes, obviously they want a favourable tax environment, but they want tax certainty because they want to plan their family's finances, their business finances over a sort of 10, 20-year horizon. So I was actually told that the worst thing that the government could do was be seen to sort of flip-flop on this, because people will, at least under the current conditions, will know this is how Britain works. But if we look like suddenly we want to attract them back, then although it's counterintuitive, it could actually make it worse, because people just don't see us as a serious country in which to, you know, plan your finances.
And it's certainly the case that very wealthy people, and particularly those who are worried about inheritance tax, will, exactly as Michael says, be thinking long term. And Michael's work follows conversations that a number of Spectator journalists, including Michael, have had with wealth managers and with individuals themselves in business who've either made the decision or know of others who've made the decision. And Michael's piece lists some very successful British entrepreneurs who've made that decision, and they've decided that, whether it's Dubai, Monaco, Italy, Portugal, that they are going to relocate. And there are other jurisdictions, like Italy, as Michael's piece makes clear, that offer, not quite bespoke, but certainly offer arrangements for individuals which give them certainty long-term about their tax status and their finances. And in the past, the life of a tax exile might have been a rather lonely one in the sorts of locations that were once described as sunny places for shady people. But now, you know, for me, there's nowhere as attractive as the United Kingdom, but I can certainly understand why some people would prefer to spend the next 10 years by Lake Como rather than by Lake Windermere.
I suppose, you know, we've talked about people leaving the country, but on the subject of people coming in, Prime Minister Keir Starmer's in Albania today, and he's announced plans for an immigration scheme that would see failed asylum seekers sent to detention centres in the Balkans. Michael Gove, is Starmer back to where the Conservatives were, effectively proposing his own Rwanda-style system?
Well, there are similarities with it. I'm sure the government would vigorously reject any comparison with Rwanda, because they used a lot of rhetorical firepower to critique the Rwanda scheme. And again, one of the problems with the Rwanda scheme, certainly, you know, I'm not criticising it, I voted for it, but in the eyes of critics, is that Rwanda was not necessarily considered by the courts to be a safe place. And it's already the case that Albania is holding migrants for Italy. There's an arrangement that Meloni has formed with Edi Rama. But Edi Rama, the Albanian Prime Minister, I think, even though he's, you know, politically quite close to Starmer, and they have a mutual friend, in two actually, in Tony Blair and in Alistair Campbell, I think he's been a little less obliging than Keir Starmer would have wanted today. Not closing the door to an arrangement, but certainly being cautious. And I think that relates to the fact that, of course, there are domestic politics in Albania, and The Spectator is the best place to come if you want to understand the domestic politics of a country like Albania, where on the other side of the political divide, I think it's Mr. Berisha is breathing down Edi Rama's neck. So the internal politics of Albania matter as much as the internal politics of the UK in this deal.
And Michael Gove, you interviewed Lord Chancellor Shabana Mahmood for the magazine this week, and we can hear a clip of that now.
I cannot believe that it's 2025, we're Britain, and in England and Wales, I'm looking at zero prison capacity in a few months' time. It's not acceptable to me. So the first principal point is we've got to get out of this permanent crisis. We've got to never be in a position where governments of all stripes have to do emergency releases of prisoners. And it falls to me to make sure we get that right. You know.
This coincides with the news that more than 1,000 inmates will be released early to free up prison spaces in England and Wales. What do you make of the Justice Secretary's predicament when it comes to prison overcrowding in the UK?
Well, I have an enormous amount of sympathy for the position in which he finds himself. I was Lord Chancellor myself for 15 months. I was in that office, the office in which I interviewed her, in the immediate aftermath of the 2015 general election. Prison capacity was tight then, and it's painfully so now. As she explained, and as the acting permanent secretary at the Ministry of Justice, Amy Rees, explained in a press conference yesterday, there are only a few hundred places left in the prison estate, and unless action is taken, the prison estate will be full, literally, no space at all. And it's already the case that we have Victorian cells that were designed for one inmate that may have two or three. It's already the case that you have some prisoners who are in their cells for 23 out of 24 hours. And so the capacity to ensure that these people are rehabilitated before they're released is inhibited. And so she's had to take some very tough steps. Now, these steps have understandably attracted criticism from her Conservative opposite number, Robert Jenrick. And Rob Jenrick is a tenacious and effective opposition politician. So he would entirely naturally want to make hay with this, and he has. But while I wouldn't criticise Robert Jenrick for doing what any opposition politician should, as an ex-Lord Chancellor, an ex-politician, I do think that Shabana Mahmood has a very difficult job to do. And in the interview, one thing that came through to me, and I hope I'm not being naive, is that she seemed determined to take tough measures now in order to ensure that later in this parliament and in the future that we have a prison state that works. And she used a particularly striking phrase. She said that she'd taken an oath on her holy book, the Quran. She's the only Muslim in the cabinet, the most high-profile Muslim woman in the country. From previous statements that she's made, her faith clearly means something to her. So I do think that despite the widespread cynicism that politics inevitably invites, that she believes that she's doing the right thing.
I thought it was fascinating in the interview that she talked a lot about technology and AI and using that in the future when dealing with offenders. Mm. You know, should liberals be worried about the lengths that she's prepared to go to do her job well?
Well, I think if you're a civil libertarian, then Shabana Mahmood is not your person. So she was very clear in the interview that she described herself as a small C social conservative, not a liberal, not a libertarian. And I think she's saying that, of course, partly to reassure us that she is releasing prisoners not because she doesn't believe in tough penalties, but because the exigencies of the prison system at the moment mean that she has no alternative as she sees it. She therefore believes that in the future we'll have to have more community sentences. Now, there's widespread cynicism about community sentences. People believe that they're a soft option. There's a risk of people absconding. The probation service is under strain. She says that we can use artificial intelligence and other means in order to monitor what offenders are doing. And she says the eyes of the state can always be on you. So if you are a civil libertarian, you can say, oh my Lord, does this mean that we're going to be in a Big Brother society? But if you believe that these guys have to be managed somehow, when they're in prison, the eyes of the state are on them. When they're out, the eyes of the state need to be there somehow. But inevitably, I'm sure, you know, if I were, and this really would be an alternative universe, a liberal Democrat justice spokesperson, then I would be beginning to mount a campaign now about the overreach, and I'd be contacting my friends at Big Brother Watch in order to start a campaign.
Stranger things have happened.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Michael. And thank you for listening.